Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that sound means that the garage is now open. Hey, yeah, good morning, all, and welcome into another edition of Fred House Sports' Race Trim Motorsports Hour. As we're going to sit here, we got the guys in the garage ready to go, and we're going to sit here for the next 90 minutes or so and get you ready for what may or, well, may not happen, perhaps maybe in Atlanta this afternoon. So, that's what we're doing. I'm trying to work on my second cup of coffee. God knows I feel like I need another three or four of them. I'm going to be honest with you. It's just that kind of morning. But if anybody wants to jump in with us here this morning and talk a little motorsports, don't hesitate to do so. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. If you are listening on a computer and Skype capable, just hit the little Skype button. Should put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, you can leave us a message in our Blog Talk Radio chat room. Or, hey, here's something innovative. Hit me up on Twitter, at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get a hold of me, at Frat House Mike. I'm always checking my notifications. We're going to take a look a little bit at what two out of three of us here on this panel, anyhow, thought was at least according to what they had mentioned to me on Thursday night, thought was a rather boring Daytona 500. We're going to take a look back at that one a little bit. We're also going to touch a little bit today on, and we did a little bit on Thursday night as well, but we'll touch on it again as well. A lot of fans are not too happy with Stewart Haas Racing right now with the announcement that, in fact, they'll be moving over to Ford next season. We'll touch on that for just a bit. It was an interesting prelim to today's race at Atlanta. A couple of the Busch brothers racing things out for the pole. Kyle gets the pole. Kyle loses the pole. Kurt gets the pole. Yeah, either way, you've got a Busch brother on the pole in Atlanta. We'll talk a little bit about that. And, hey, how about this one? It's time for a little bit of NHRA updating as we are already into our second event of the season out in Phoenix. And so, well, that's my time to shine. I'll jump in there and talk to you a little bit about what's happening in the hot rods out there in Phoenix. Top Fuel and Funny Car and all that kind of stuff. We'll get into a little bit of that. In the meantime, let me get my gang in here who, they make this thing happen. I've got Sidekick. I've got Brandon. Guys, how are we doing this morning?
Pretty good, man. I've chugged down my complimentary bottle of Sunoco Race Fuel.
I was going to say, my God.
You know,
what are you on, your fifth? You're on your fifth Monster or something.
Third, come on now.
No, I'm on my six shot espresso. and then that opening, dude, that, I'm sorry, that's got to be one of the best openings to a show, man. If that doesn't wake you up and get you going.
What, the music?
You know, yeah, our opening.
You like that?
Race trip show.
Really? Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I was sitting here banging my head, horns up and everything, man.
Honest to God.
Air guitar.
I need to acquire a taste for espresso, honest to God. I never acquired a taste for it. But honest to God, if it gets me like you, I gotta work that one out. I gotta figure out a way to start. Yeah, maybe I just hold my nose and drink the stuff down, you know?
Well, no, but I get it, not the name drop, but I go to Starbucks and I get it. And so when I, it's six shots. But then I, I get what they call 6 pumps of classic syrup. So basically, it's, you know, for every shot, it's a, you know, it's a thing of sugar. Yeah, you know, and then I get a little half and half put in it to sweeten it, so it takes the bitterness off. But I'm telling you, man, this thing will amp you up.
You got to go have your blood sugar checked, my friend. I think, you know, dear God, I've had enough health issues in the past couple of years. You know, last thing I need now is to be, you know, diagnosed a diabetic. Dear God. Brandon doesn't sound quite as hyped up. I don't know.
Well, like I said, I just started my third monster. Give me some time.
See, I think that's kind of the difference is, you know, what Brandon, you know, Brandon's doing the Sunoco race fuel. I'm doing that stuff that Michael Waltrip ran the first year at Daytona.
Oh.
The jet fuel mixed.
He's got jet fuel going.
I'm probably running stuff that, you know, your boy over there in NHRA runs. I'll probably blow a motor in the first turn.
Oh no.
Oh. Yeah, don't do that, please. God knows I need you on this. I'm only good for about 10 minutes on this show. Yeah. And that's only every other week. That's every other week when NHRA is going. So don't do that. I need you. I thought we would kind of revisit a couple of things. You know, we got into some things on Thursday night, but and I kind of felt that we had to. Today is really the day when we can get into things in a little more elongated fashion, because obviously this
Absolutely.
Is our program. It's our program specifically for motorsports. And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I thought we'd go back to Daytona for just a couple of minutes anyhow.
Well, sure.
You know, and I found it interesting. I'll give both of you a time to respond for a moment. And then I'll go at this from a little bit different angle. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I'm getting tired of the conspiracy theorists. I really am. I mean, it doesn't seem to matter what NASCAR does or doesn't do. They're going to be out there and they're going to be beating a drum and saying it's no damn good. Everything is no damn good. I'm so sick of it. And they've destroyed the sport and they've got to go back to the way that it was. And I mean, I just don't know what the hell these people want, seriously. But anyhow, listening to you guys on Thursday night, Daytona was a downer. I mean, you got to be hoping, I guess you guys are hoping that today is going to be, you know, a lot different. I mean, of course, it's a smaller track. What is it, about a mile? Is it a mile less? Than
mile and a half.
Well, yeah, but
it's
a mile less than Daytona,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
Daytona's 2.5. Yeah. So, all right, so a somewhat smaller track. Still a mid-range track, my size. I like this size. I like the big tracks too, but
that's what she said.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming.
Well, you start off the show talking about poles and Bush. Come on now. Where did you think this is going to go on a Sunday morning? Come on now.
Sunday, all places, right? Do not try to compete against a guy who's had 6 espressos, folks.
Exactly.
Now you got me completely off my train of thought.
Mission accomplished.
Exactly. There's relaxed Saturday at the frat house, and then there's Sunday morning.
It's off the rails Sunday.
The wheels come off. We're in the wall. We're wrecking loose. But we wouldn't have it any other way on a Sunday morning before NASCAR. Come on now.
Really. Honest to God. You guys have got to be hoping that today is going to be a little more, I guess a little more, I don't know, how would I phrase it? Exciting, huh? Go ahead. Talk to me.
Well,
Daytona was a downer.
Daytona had a little excitement there at the end, and there was a little bit in between. But like we were mentioning on Thursday, it was kind of like follow the leader, you know. And I feel personally that's kind of how restrictor plate racing is. depending on how they tweak the package, you either have got, you know, the one extreme is you got, you know, it's loose, people are wrecking, you've got big ones, you know, and that tends to be a little bit more exciting, you know, not that, you know, we're all about watching, you know, people wreck, but, you know, when you take out half the field in a wreck, and that, you know, it kind of changes things up in the race. Then on the other side, you've got it where they've got the cars so safe and so, you know, so similar,
yeah,
you know, that you have what happened last Sunday where it's like follow the leader. You know, it's like watching trains go around a circle. It's not even exciting because you didn't put any mountains or bridges or scenery in. It's just the, you know, it's the typical day train around the bottom of the tree. You know, how many times can you watch that train go around before it just gets boring? You know what I mean?
Right.
And I felt like I think this year was one of those years where things were too tightened down. And it led to, you know, basically whoever got out front got to stay out front. And, you know, and it kind of the lap 1 to 199 was kind of boring. You know what I mean?
You know, I know I think I asked this question, or perhaps maybe a variation of this question, on Thursday night. But you're talking about, you know, it being kind of locked down and, you know, in other words, here's my point, Sidekick. You make it almost sound as if it was a car performance sort of thing. In other words, it was the hardware. It's the way the cars are set up for this track. It's not the result that we saw was not purposeful on the part of the drivers. It was more just the way the cars are set up. Do you think that was the case, or was it a purposeful thing on the part of the drivers?
I don't think it was purposeful on the drive. Well, I mean, obviously you had the JGR guys out front, and they were probably doing a little bit of blocking, you know, with, you know, if a line was coming up, you know, I think it was usually Hamlin. Hamlin was kind of like the trailer of the group. And
right.
when a line would get to Hamlin, Hamlin would kind of, you know, poke out and get in front of that line and slow them down. So there was a little bit of blocking that did go on, but I think generally speaking, it was probably a car handling versus, you know, drivers trying to, you know, intentionally race that way. You know, because we saw Joey. Now it's still early in the season to see, you know, maybe the Joe Gibbs guys are that much better at the start of the season versus the other guys. But I tend to think it's more of a car setup thing, because you saw Joey Logano try to get that outside line going, and it never ever got going in that race.
I think what you see here at these restrictor plate tracks is NASCAR walking a fine line between let's have a good show, but let's not wreck half the field.
And
you know, that's how these packages they come up with. They want the car to be somewhat stable in the pack, but when it's too stable, then they can't get apart. You know, they can't pass. They can't do that. But and then if you get too much passing, then you get, you know, too much, you know, instability, and then you'll get the one guy who gets squirrely in the middle and takes out half the field. So,
yeah,
you know, I think that's the problem. I don't think that's going to be indicative of the whole season. I think this could just be Daytona and Talladega. We're just going to have to get used to, you know, the good old days of, you know, somebody restarting 20th and flying up to the front ain't happening as often anymore. You know, I'm not saying it'll never happen, but, you know, right now the way it is, we're kind of stuck with the kind of, as you pointed it out, the follow the leader. And if you got a team like a super team like Joe Gibbs up front, they can control a lot of things with four cars, five cars if you count Truex, who was up there with them. You know, they can really control the pace and who can get up there and whether
that's
second line.
Yeah,
and, you know, if that's going to happen, then, you know, then the Stewart Haas guys and Hendrick guys need to start ganging back. They just need to get smarter, that's all. But, you know,
And you know, and when we watched the qualifying for that, all the JGR guys were up front. They qualified, you know.
They had their stuff together for Daytona. You can't take that away from them.
Well, that's interesting. I wanted to, you know, let me go to JGR for a moment. You know, you're referring to them as a super team and what have you. I mean, look, Joe Gibbs Racing is a very, very good team. There's no doubt about that. We've seen that presented over the years. They right now, however, guys, and let me get your opinion on this one. I mean, dear God, what we saw last week, and even in qualifying for today, and in Xfinity, holy smokes, they might be a super team. And I mean super with a capital S-U-P-E-R. I mean, you know, it was just a couple of years ago we saw this team having all kinds of issues because of Toyota Racing Development making some modifications to the engine. But boy, oh boy, they have come back with a vengeance, haven't they?
Well, yeah, you got to give them credit for that too. I mean, that's what good teams do. You know, good teams, if they struggle, they come back. I mean, you know, we've seen other teams struggle and come back. Hendrick's had its moments. Stuart Haas wasn't always what they are.
Yep.
You know, they get there, and, you know, right now I think you see Roush and Childress kind of in that struggling mode. See if either one of them can come out of it. I mean, I used to call Childress a super team. I don't anymore. I mean, back when, Harvick was there and, you know, Jeff Burton was still driving. They won lots of races back then, but they don't seem to do that right now. So, go ahead.
I was going to say go back. That's how Dodge wound up out of NASCAR. You know, they got down into a slump and they just couldn't get out. Everybody else was running better, and they ended up, everybody wound up finally leaving Dodge, and they wound up getting out of the sport.
Leaving Dodge, yeah, that sounds funny. They all left Dodge,
Dodge may come back. You don't know. There's been talks.
Yeah,
they have long term plans.
Yeah.
I don't think they want to be out of NASCAR. It's just that's kind of the way it went for right now.
Yeah,
I think you're going to see. Well, I think to continue though what Mike was saying, I think you're going to see a lot better racing today because we're going to go back to the package that they tried like halfway through last year.
Well,
that
good
did produce some pretty good racing.
Yep, good for you for bringing it up because that's right on the agenda right next there for a moment. And let me I sent you guys over. I don't know whether you had a moment or not to look it over. You know, one of the things I pointed out yesterday here is that, where I start to lose, I enjoy motorsports, obviously. I love drag racing in particular, but I enjoy motorsports. But I got to be honest, when we start getting into some of the mechanics of it all, with the exception of basic physics, I mean, I understand basic physics, but when we start getting into the mechanics of it all, my eyes start to glass over a little bit. But I sent over, and I don't know whether you guys had a chance to look it over, but we're going to Atlanta. Article I sent over to you, NASCAR rolls out a new aero package for Atlanta. Is this new, Brandon, or are you saying this is a replication of what they had last year?
Well, if you remember last year, I think it was around Kentucky, they started trying high downforce package or less downforce package and put more back into the driver's hands. Well, that's the package they started with this year. So it's not new. The only reason I say new, it's because, you know, I think NASCAR made a bad call last year switching back to the previous package for the chase. You know, I think they should have just kept what they had running from mid-season till the start of the chase and finished the chase that way. But now they wanted to go back and finish the season with what they started. So that's what they did. But now they're going to start this year, and, you know, this package is what they have moving forward. And I'm sure throughout the season you might hear a tweak here or there. Or, you know, and some of the tracks, like the bigger tracks that are faster, like Michigan and some of those, they have a little quite slightly different, you know, rule package compared to what they're doing like at this track. So, yeah, I think it's going to be good. I think we'll see a good race today. I'm really looking forward to it.
It almost seems like, and, you know, I'm not saying it's good, bad, or not. I don't know. but it almost feels and seems like NASCAR is seemingly trying to come up with a design for almost each individual track based upon its conditions. Would that be fair or unfair?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, that's probably fair. That's probably a fair statement as far as what they're trying to do. I mean, there's going to be, similar packages at these mile and a half, quote unquote, cookie cutter tracks. And then I would imagine like your 2 mile tracks, like Michigan and California, and you could even lump Pocono in there, probably have a similar package. And we know Daytona and Talladega do. And then all the short tracks will have another completely different set of rules. So yeah, they'll have a set for each style track and road courses. They'll have a totally different package as it is. So, they actually have special cars with the weight distribution better, and they put the gas in on the opposite side of the car. And when they do the pit at the road course, they start on the opposite side. They start of when the oval. So it's totally backwards at road courses.
Well, see there, I'm learning. See, I'm starting to figure this all out. You know, it's not as complicated as I made it out to be. All we're going to do now is just come up with a design or a regulation, I guess is what you would say, for the track, depending on what the type of track might be that folks are going to from one given week to the next. One of the at Daytona last week, one of the drivers that was a victim, and there weren't too many victims in last week's race, but one of them was young Chase Elliott, who started out on the pole, and of course there was a lot of almost of kind of fanfare for that. I mean, here's the number, number 24. on the pole for the second year in a row, and of course being driven by rookie Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott ended up wrecking the car, taking it off into the infield there, and putting some pretty good damage on it. Interesting piece that I sent over to you guys. Again, I don't know whether you had a chance or not to actually take a look at it or not, but I just wanted to bring it up because, Brandon, you had said something during the race last week, which I found interesting. The headline on this article, which was essentially about Chase Elliott, bounce back at Atlanta Motor Speedway would mean everything to Chase Elliott. Now, interesting, Brandon, because we heard from the booth last week, the broadcast booth, after Chase Elliott went out of the race, there seemed to be this, particularly from, and I don't know whether it was just Jeff Gordon waxing nostalgia about the 24 or what, but there seemed to be this lamenting. Oh, what a damn shame. Boy, that's got to be heartbreaking. I mean, we heard, and it was very funny because you kind of almost, there was almost a little bit of an edge in your voice that came back with. Well, he'll be fine. He's going to do fine. It's a long season.
sitting in the seats, I said the same thing.
I kind of sat there hearing it, and I kind of was snickering to myself a little bit, going, well, son of a gun, isn't that the truth? I mean, but it's not just Chase Elliott you could say that about. It's everybody. It doesn't matter who would have ended up in a wreck.
Junior did exactly. The same exact wreck. He had the same exact wreck that Chase Elliott had.
Yes, exactly. So
I mean, coming off turn four, got loose and wound up in the infield.
So you're hearing this lament going on during the race last week, right? And then Brandon's over there in the corner kind of, well, he's going to be all right now. And then this article.
Put some dirt on it.
This article. Yeah, exactly.
This put article, some dirt on it, Jed. You'll be all right.
This article comes out with this kind of lamentful headline. Bounce back in Atlanta would mean everything to Chase Elliott. I mean, okay, here's my question. Are we putting way too much on Chase Elliott? Are we putting too much pressure on this kid already early on in the season?
I think so. I think we've got another case of Joey Logano. Yeah, remember when Joey Logano came in and everybody said, this kid is the greatest thing to ever race a car.
Since sliced bread.
Yeah, since sliced bread.
That's
his
nickname,
sliced bread, right?
That's the name. Exactly, yeah.
And
that's how the name came. Everybody thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Is that right? Is that where the name came from?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That's where it came from. And he didn't quite, you know, do well with JGR, but then it put him on Team Penske, and he's, you know, on those pesky Penskes, as Mike likes to call him. And he's a totally different driver over there now than he was with JGR. And I think that Chase Elliott is kind of got that rookie burden. Plus he's in the 24. You know, he's taking over for Jeff Gordon.
Right.
I mean, those are huge shoes to fill. I don't care who you put in that car. You know what I mean? You're talking, you know, you talk about the history of the 24 and Jeff Gordon. I mean, you know, come on now. So I think there is kind of this over ego pumping or whatever, you know, for Chase Elliott. Having said that, though, that kid, his dad, Bill Elliott, has groomed him for this, you know. And you're talking about, I mean, he won the Xfinity race down there, qualified on the pole for the 500. And he just happened to, you know, it happens. You know, we talk about it all the time, especially when we talk about fantasy and restrictor plate. You know, one little, you know, hiccup and you're out of the race. And unfortunately, that's what happened to him, you know. And, you heard everybody when I was down there, you know, he wrecked, and you heard a collective like sigh from, you know, however, you know, 200,000 or however many people were down there. You know what I mean? When he spun and it's unfortunate, but like Brandon said, and I said the same thing in my seat, you know, it's one race. It's not like this guy, you know, it's not like you can label dud on him now. You know, okay, he wrecked out of the 500. You know, okay. That doesn't mean his career's going to suck now.
No.
You know?
There's another piece to this headline, too, that Fred House Mike's talking about. Now, we all got to remember some history here. You know, Bill Elliott and the Elliott family's from a little town called Dawsonville, Georgia. Happens to be a suburb of Atlanta. And every time Bill Elliott raced at Atlanta, you know, it was like God was racing on the track. So, you know, by association, the same feelings will be for Chase. So, you know, the headline, well, redemption would come at Atlanta, has to do with the fact it's his home track. And he's going to be the one, if he goes out in front, it's going to sound like Junior going out in front at Daytona. You're going to hear the whole place go nuts. Because Chase Elliott is the second coming now. Come on now.
Yeah. And speaking of.
Well, I wanted to get to that, though.
You should have heard Daytona. When Junior wrecked.
Oh, dude, we could hear it on TV. Not a problem.
We
could hear it. You could hear it plain as day.
Well, when he went ahead, too. When he was leading, because our one point was to be leading the race. So we heard the crowd. But, we've talked about Chase Elliott on this show and on these airwaves, on our airwaves here, going way back to last year. I think the kid is just marvelous. I mean, honest to God, I watch him, and I'm going to be honest with you. I think he's got, you know, they talk about the natural instinctive talent of somebody like a Kyle Busch. I think he's got the potential to be better than Kyle Busch, just as an instinctive driver. But Brandon, I want to explore it with you for a second, because it was the second time now you've said it. I mean, you're saying, you know, the second coming, you know, Chase Elliott's the second coming. What's your opinion of Chase Elliott? Because I'm getting the sense, perhaps, maybe,
No, I agree with you. I think he's got all the skills. I think Bill Elliott did an awesome job grooming him. I have no problem with him with him at all. I love the way he handles himself on and off the track. I think he doesn't just, you know, give you the line. He'll tell you a little truth when they interview him. I like him. I have no issue with him. I think he's fine. I think he's going to be fine. You know, I just think, you know, the first race out in the 24 is, as Sidekick said, for, you know, replacing a legend, you know, taking the pole, and then he happens to have a little trouble in the race. People overreact, you know, and then you find the, you know, the article you just brought up, they're tying in, you know, a disappointing finish with, oh, now he's coming back to his home track. Look out. This is going to be, you know, redemption time. It's like, come on. Enough of this.
Yeah,
let him run his race. Let him learn how to do what he's doing. He's a rookie, you know, in a new series. You know, give him, you know, some time. You know, he's not going to come in and at the highest level of stock car racing and instantly dominate. But you know, I like him. I think he's great, and I think he's going to be. I think he's probably going to end up being better than his dad in the long run. I mean, his dad was only a single time champion. He only won the series title once. He did win a lot of races, you know, in his day, in his peak, but he only managed to win one title. You know, he's not one of the, you know, 2, 3, 4 time champions, and or even 6 or 7 if he really go up the list. But I think Chase Elliott has the potential to, you know, far surpass his father.
Yeah, it's interesting, and Psychic, I think you might have something to it as well. You know, you talk about having enormous shoes to fill in the 24. But is it also – might it also be the images people have of the young 24? In other words,
we remember
Jeff Gordon coming on the scene – and just absolutely dominating almost from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, when he first...
Well,
he
took him 2 or 3 years. He didn't do so hot that first year. That first year, he was a little cocky kid with a porn star mustache doing nothing.
I know. That mustache.
I mean, come on now. He didn't really start, you know, putting his shoes to it till like, I think it was about his third season around, like the Coca-Cola 600 or Charlotte. And all of a sudden it started to click, and then all of a sudden the 24 was, you know, up front all the time. So it wasn't like instant.
I don't have the benefit of the history the way that you do.
Dude, if you saw Jeff Gordon in his rookie year, porn star mustache, cocky little kid, starting the same year, his first race was the same race Richard Petty retired from. It's just like, it was like somebody wrote a novel.
And that I know just from having read about it. But, you know, my memories, as you well know, and I've brought this up a number of times, my memories of Jeff Gordon were, you know, it felt like for a period of time there, every week you're hearing Jeff Gordon won, Jeff Gordon won, Jeff Gordon won.
I think that was, you know, a couple years into it. I think the difference between Chase Elliott and Jeff Gordon, I think Jeff Gordon was a lot cockier and thought he was going to just walk in and rule the roost, where I think Chase Elliott, I don't see him as being cocky. I see him as being, I'm confident. I'm good at what I do, but I want to learn, and I'm going to do the best I can. I think I don't see him coming off as cocky and as edgy as Gordon.
No,
at least, but that's just my impression. I just remember when Gordon came in, man, he came in fresh off a rule in the Busch series and thought he was just going to take over, and he didn't quite work out that way right away.
Right. Well, and, you know, the other thing is, I think that helped elevate Chase. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Chase, but then you have him come in, win the pole, and then win the Xfinity race.
Yep.
And I think it just exponentially exploded, like, hey, this kid's going to win the 500.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, You almost felt like there's this momentum thing that just said, this kid is here and he ain't taking nothing from nobody. He kind of, you know, and then when he wrecked out, I think it kind of, you know, it burst fans' bubbles. I don't think it burst his bubble at all. You know what I mean? I don't, like, you know, like Brandon said, I don't think the kid's cocky at all. But, you know, like I said, I think the fans more were like,
well, it just has struck me. It has struck me over the past, I guess, well, since this season began, you know, I guess week and a half or so, 2 weeks. It has struck me that there just seems to be an awful lot of hype and attention and pressure being placed on Chase Elliott. Now, and you know, there is a recent comparison that one could make to it, and that's Austin Dillon. Because Austin Dillon came in with a pedigree. You know, he's got that long lineage, that pedigree family there behind him. And yet, and if I'm not mistaken, Austin Dillon, he was on the pole for Daytona, right? In his opening race.
Yep.
So
you're right.
Very, very similar circumstances. And yet, I don't recall, despite the fact, as I'm pointing out, I think you've got very similar circumstances right down the line to the pedigree. I don't recall quite the hype. Well, and for God's sake, let's not forget this, too. Take all of that into account, and then he's coming back in, and we're resurrecting the number three. I mean, for God's sake, right? This is all setting up. And yet, after that one race, it was kind of like all the pressure was off Austin Dillon. Go ahead.
Well, you know what? You draw these comparisons, and I want to point out something I find funny / almost ridiculous, is you have Austin Dillon coming back and, you know, driving the three, placing, not necessarily replacing, but, you know, taking the mantle for, you know, for senior, okay? And then you have Chase Elliott coming in for Jeff Gordon.
Right.
But nobody, I think, thought that Dillon was going to come in and be senior. You know what I mean? Like, nobody was putting that pressure on Dillon's shoulders, I felt like. Like, you know, basically it was like, no one's ever going to live up to senior. No, we're never going to see another senior. Nobody's going to be like him. So there wasn't that pressure when he came back into three. You know, there was a little bit about the fact that he was in the three. Nobody was really comparing him to Earnhardt, whereas Chase Elliott comes in and he's replacing Jeff Gordon, and everybody's like, this is the new Jeff Gordon.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm trying to
do. You know what I mean?
Isn't that kind of funny? I know. I'm trying to reconcile.
There will never be another senior ever again. We can replace Jeff Gordon.
All right, I see where you're going. I see where you're going.
Well, the other part is, you're saying
he didn't have the pressure because nobody ever expects anybody to be able to replace Dale Sr. But boy, Chase, he can certainly live up to at least Jeff Gordon. I got you. All right. See, because I'm trying to reconcile this.
Brandon's an Earnhardt fan, so I'd like to hear his take to see if he sees it the same way I kind of saw it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, I think the whole thing with Dillon in the three was just because it was at Daytona where Senior was killed. I don't know that, you know, anybody ever thought Austin Dillon was going to be that type of driver. But I think Chase Elliott's bringing an expectation along with him. In other words, he's shown so much so quickly. You know, I think people think this kid's going to be a legit superstar. I don't think anybody ever looked at Austin Dillon and said, we got a legitimate superstar on our hands here. Now, what we got is Childress's grandson and Mike Dillon, who's, you know, been in racing forever. And he's going to be a solid guy, but he's not going to be a superstar. Where I think people look at Chase Elliott and see superstar because he has that it. You know, as we've all said, he has that talent that you can just see it translate on the track. He's proved it in Xfinity with a championship, winning races. Not that Dillon did, but Dillon just doesn't, I don't know. He doesn't pass the eye test as much as Chase Elliott does. I think that's why you're seeing all the extra hype on Chase Elliott. I think people are seeing the potential of Chase Elliott more so than a guy like Dillon. You know what I mean? I think that's why you're seeing it.
I agree with you. You know, aside from everything that we're talking about, which is all kind of cosmetic, because a lot of what we're talking about here in many respects is kind of, I mean, let's put it straight. Let's get straight. It's cosmetic. It has nothing to do with performance on the track. For those of us that are watching it on the track, you're absolutely right, Brandon. It's an eye test thing. When you watch Chase Elliott, there's something different about his performance versus Austin Dillon. They're just flat out. Interesting observation here I want to bring up from our good listener, Liz, who leaves us a message in our chat room. You know, they should have put him in a different number. Put Chase Elliott in a different number. Put him in number 25 for the first year, and there wouldn't be the pressure. Is the pressure
better yet,
around?
Better yet, put him back in the 9 because Richard Petty Motorsports ain't using the 9 no more. That's what they should have done.
Let me ask though. I mean, would that, if we do that, then suddenly we're taking the driver out of the equation, and we're making it more about Jeff Gordon, aren't we?
I don't understand what you mean though.
Well, in other words, the pressure isn't being applied to him because he's simply driving Jeff Gordon's number.
I see what you're saying. Well, I don't know. I think that 24, I think Jeff Gordon has built the 24 into a iconic number of NASCAR. That's why, you know, the 24 stayed as opposed to, you know, the 25, which he ran last year, or maybe switch into the 9. I'm wondering if, you know, to be quite honest with you, if Richard Petty Motorsports would have announced sooner that they were switching to the 44 from the 9, I bet they would have seriously considered, you know, switching, but I bet they already had all their marketing in place, you know, with all the pictures and commercial shoots and all the stuff they do in the off season, getting ready for Napa, you know, in the 24 car, you know, they probably, you know, didn't have time to switch. And once you start, you're kind of there, you know what I mean? Switching the number after all the promotional materials out there with the other numbers probably just not going to be a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, that Richard Petty Motorsports switching to 44, you know, was, I think I remember reading it was like two, three weeks before Daytona. You know, they went back to an old number they used to use, and they're not using the 9 anymore. You know, the 9 they inherited through Ray Evernham and the Dodge deal, and they never really – I don't think they ever really necessarily wanted it. They just kept it, you know. I think the 9 would have been the number to put Chase in. That's what his dad ran, and let's do it. But, you know.
Interesting.
I think the 24 sticking around is not a bad thing, too. There's certain numbers you don't want to see go away, and we're used to a 24 being on the track. You know?
Yeah. Well, and there's certain numbers you don't want to see come back. Like, remember, yeah, we were just talking about 3 and Austin Dillon, and I didn't think the 3 should have come back. I thought that should have been one of the numbers that retired.
I'd have been happy not to see it, but now that it's back, it doesn't really bother me that much because, you know, it is what it is. It is just a number. You know, I don't think Dale Sr., as you pointed out, I was a fan and I followed him. I don't think he gave two craps whether that number was out there or not out there. You know, he's just a racer. And I think he just, you know, it is what it is.
He
just
slapped any number on that door and he'd race the paint off that door.
Once he won a few championships with the 3, he wasn't necessarily giving it up, but the same time, you know, after, you know, with him passing, I don't think he'd care, you know, one way or the other if they, you know, left it in memorial to him or it was out there racing. I don't think that kind of thing he would even give a second thought.
I think it goes to what you were just talking about though, Brandon. It goes to quote unquote marketing. And really, let's get it straight. The numbers are there for the fans.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's what
the score numbers were there for originally, just to score the cars. How do you keep track of who's where and on the track?
Yeah. Right.
Before we had all the computerized stuff. I mean, let's face it. You had people sitting around the track with a pad and a pad of paper and a pencil writing down the numbers as they went by. That's how they used to score the races till they got, you know, all this fancy transponder computer controlled stuff we got now.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are a marker. They're a marker. That's all they are for us, for the fans, and as you say, for the scoring. That's what is kind of a bit of a pain in the ass at the beginning of the season. You know, you get to the beginning of a season and you've gotten used to a couple of your drivers driving in particular colors, and suddenly their sponsorship changes, and now we got all new paint schemes. Now I got to figure out again.
Yep.
Because it's not just numbers, but then when you're watching a track, you're looking for color. You're looking for, I mean, you know, that's how I go about it. You know, I'm looking for my colorful M&Ms. That's what I'm looking for. You know.
Well, and even that's difficult at the beginning of the season because the paint schemes change up sometimes.
Well, that's my point.
For the
sponsor,
it's like, you know, either between numbers and paint schemes, you know, exactly. The first couple of races of the season, you're like, wait, hold on a minute.
Who's that?
Heck, even guys like Truex, you got manufacturer changes too. I mean, you got to throw that in there.
I mean,
it's harder to tell the cars apart. I mean, back in when we were talking about Dale Earnhardt and Bill Elliott racing, you could clearly tell a Monte Carlo from a Thunderbird or a Lumina from a Thunderbird or the early days of the Taurus. You could tell, you know, you could see a car and you'd know which brand it is. Now they all look the same.
You're absolutely right. Someone I saw post
in a NASCAR group that we're in. You go, that was when stock was in stock car racing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Well,
exactly.
Even if you go back to the 80s, Pontiac, Buick, and Chevrolet, you had three GM products, and all you had to do was look at the front of the car, and you could tell by the grill what it was. They all looked basically the same shape. You could tell by the grill. The whole front nose, you could tell immediately whether it was a Pontiac, a Buick, or a Chevy. I mean, it wasn't hard. It was very distinguishable. Now, you can't, you know. You can't tell a Chevy and a Ford and a Toyota apart unless you got an idea who it is. Then you know, for the most part, the shapes of these quote unquote stock cars have been very manipulated over the years by NASCAR. So nobody has an advantage. They want them all the same, essentially.
Even just last week, it took a little getting used to for me to see the 24 running around in Napa blue. I mean, that was just weird right there alone. You know, I'm still stuck back in the days when Napa Blue was being run by Truex. So, you know, was it a Truex? It was Truex, right?
Yeah, 56.
Yep, exactly. That's what I, you know.
So. Well, Chase did run, what, six or seven races last year with the 25 with Napa on it, you know, just to get his feet wet in the Cup Series last year. So it's not totally new to see that. It's just the number changing to 24.
It's 24. That's what it is. And that's my point.
You're so used to seeing DuPont or
Exalta. Exactly. Yep. Right. And that's my point. And I think that's the point that Liz was trying to make is this more about the mystique of the number than anything to have to do with, well, you know, it's Chase Elliott, and well, he's a wonder king, and you know that sort of thing. I mean, does it have to do more with just the number? But well, we'll see where that number goes today. I'm just curious. Hold on a moment. I was going to pull up the qualifying list here. I don't have the qualifying list up. I thought I had the qualifying list up. Gosh darn it! Where do I have the qualifying list? I'll pull that up in a second, I guess. Because I'm wondering where Chase Elliott is in the lineup for today. I'll check that in a second. Talking about lineups, though, and Brandon, I think you've got kind of a little bit more of a lowdown on this situation than even I did yesterday. Obviously, I was thrilled on, you know, talking about Joe Gibbs Racing and how strong they've been. I was thrilled on Friday when and I was able to even put up the post on our in our Frat House fantasy group page over there that Kyle Busch had gotten the pole for Atlanta. Wow. I was like, whoa, boy, Joe Gibbs Racing is just on. Boy, they're having a great beginning to the season. There's Kyle Busch on the pole. Wonderful. Who's in second spot? Kurt. Yep, Kurt's right there. Stuart Haas Racing. Brother Kurt right behind him in number two. And then the word comes down, I guess it was late on Friday, that nope. Back it up, folks. Kyle's going to the rear of the pack because his qualifying was disqualified after he failed post-qualifying inspection. I think you got a little bit more of a lowdown on this one, Brandon, right? You know, we talked about this a little bit last week with who was coming from the rear last week, and I made the point. Kansas was coming from the rear at Daytona. Kyle Busch, he won't be in the rear for long, right? Not in Joe Gibbs, not in Joe Gibbs' equipment.
No. What happened was, I can explain this real quick.
Yep.
Usually you hear the phrase toe-in, which is where the wheels are actually not facing straight ahead. They're kind of angled in a little bit so that when the car goes up to speed, they drift back to normal with the momentum and inertia of the car. Well, that's usually something you hear on the front wheels. Well, the back wheels, they put a rule into place that the toe-in, in other words, the distance the rear wheels are apart, can't change by more than 0.15 of an inch from pre-qualifying to post-qualifying. And for some reason, that's what Kyle Busch failed, and from the sounds of it, he barely failed it, because NASCAR's already said there's going to be no further penalties other than his time being disallowed. So it might have just been a freak, you know, thing, maybe something mechanical didn't hold up right, something maybe bent more than it should have, you know, something odd happened. But I mean, we don't ever talk about the towing of rear wheels. So it's not like, I don't think Kyle Busch and JGR was trying to cheat anything. I think they were just the victims of maybe a part failure or something odd from just by the sounds of it. Because really, if you think about it, the rear wheels, you don't want to tow them in or out all that much. It's the front wheels that are, you know, in the front pushing the car, not the back. So, you know, I guess there's a reason the rule is in place, obviously, but, you know, at the same token, I don't think there's anything funky going on here, because the way the release I read was worded was, you know, we're talking about, you know, 15 one-hundredths of an inch. I mean,
oh,
come
God.
On now. Like, we're talking about, yeah, it's so ridiculous of a decimal. So, you know, and NASCAR's already basically put the issue to bed. So they don't ever do that. They always say, oh, well, we'll take it back to, you know, the engineering lab back in North Carolina, and we'll
exactly.
let you know, like, Tuesday or Wednesday what the answer
right.
And they already have come out and said this is done. This is his punishment. And, you know, so to me, that sounds of, well, something, you know, he probably was at, you know, 0.16 as opposed to 0.15. And, you know, that's what, you know, the result of it is. I don't think it's going to hold him back, though. That team's too good. I think they're going to see him. He's going to, you know, come from the back. He'll be up in the front. It may take a little while. I mean, it's not like, you know, Daytona where you can just blast up through the pack if you're that better car. You know, you can go from the back to top 15 in no time at Daytona. But I think, you know, maybe by the second pit stop, he'll be up in the top 5, top 10, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I'm just looking up. I do have the starting lineup for this afternoon. Now up, I'm looking at Carl Edwards, JGR, coming out of the 7th spot. Talking about Martin Truex Jr. coming out of the 9th spot. If we want to start talking, as you like to say, satellite. Boy, that 78 hasn't lost a beat at all. Might actually be a great move for them. I mean, Truex had a tremendous season last year, and so far, just tremendous results early so far that we've seen in the season. Denny Hamlin coming out of the 12th spot, Kansas coming out of the 13th spot. My goodness. So, you know, all those Toyotas right up there again. I had brought up Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott coming out of 24. So the number 24 coming out of the 24 spot. Yeah.
There's your conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
24 in Atlanta. Oh, no. Here they come.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, really. Oh, God almighty. If I read one more stupid ass.
If he wins today, it's all a ruse.
It's going to be. There might be a couple of NASCAR groups I'm going to have to quit.
Oh,
honest
God.
To God. Seriously. yeah. But anyhow, there's our yeah, that's at least the early lineup there with the JGRs all up front. If anybody wants to jump in with us, I hadn't thrown the number out in a while, but if anybody wants to jump in, because we got about, well, I guess we got a little bit more than just about 30 minutes remaining. If anybody wants to jump in with us, don't hesitate. 347-826-9964. That's how you get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can leave us a message, as Liz has done here a couple of times, in our Blog Talk Radio chat room. Or you can hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike, at Frat House Mike. We talked a little bit about this on Thursday night. Let me bring it back up again here for the benefit of our Sunday morning listeners. And it was interesting because, again, a couple of the articles that I had sent over to you guys, I guess, yesterday in today's outline, even more and more fans, NASCAR fans, coming out really, really opposed or disturbed by the announcement that Stuart Haas would be moving away from Chevy and going over to Ford's next year in 2017. I'm going to be honest with you. It's still something that I'm having a little kind of get my brain wrapped around. I'm still a little bit shocked by the whole thing. I had seen where apparently I don't know if anybody else saw it or not, I didn't get a chance to get into it in depth. But apparently Tony Stewart himself actually did come out and make an official statement about the whole move. Did anybody catch that?
Yeah, I read a little bit about it from all sides, and, you know, he gave the company speak. You know, it's the best move for the organization, going to be a great partner. You know, Sidekick brought it up a little bit on Thursday, gives them a little more flexibility building their own cars in-house, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, he sounds on board. I don't know. At this point, the cars are so much the same. I don't think it even really matters, to be honest with you. And Tony Stewart's probably smart enough to realize that. You know what I mean? He's not a, you know, one thing you might have an opinion on smoke, but I've never considered Tony to be not a very smart, you know, motorsports person. I mean, he owns tracks, he owns sprint car teams, he owns one of the best sprint cup teams in NASCAR, co-owns anyway. I think he's a pretty smart fellow, and this deal coming along, you know, was a good opportunity. He saw Ford wants to have a, you know, quote unquote super team, and, you know, his was, they're playing second fiddle to Hendrick. You know, he's smart enough to do 2+2, you know, he can get to that four real quick. You know what I mean?
Well, that's interesting. Because I mean, let me make my naive observation about that, because you're saying, well, you know, the cars are all so much the same. That might be true, as you pointed out earlier, in the way that they look. You know, difficult to distinguish your models any longer. But I don't know if you can necessarily say the same, though, Brandon, when it comes to performance. I mean, with the exception of the Penske team, I don't see Ford's lighting it up out here on these tracks. I mean, be perfectly honest with you. And that's why I'm a little bit surprised by it. I mean, if you've had success as Stuart Haas has with Chevy, I still don't understand the reason for why you would want to make the move.
Well, that's easy.
Go ahead.
They want to step out from underneath the shadow of Hendrick, and they want to assert themselves as a power team or a power broker, you know, in NASCAR. So as long as they're a satellite team of Hendrick, they're never going to get that. And what Ford, I guess, basically offered them was, hey, you come over to the Blue Oval side and, you know, get your motors from Roush Yates, You have full control over your car. And so essentially, you can stand on your own, develop your own stuff in-house with our motors, and you can be your own team. And that's what I think Stuart Haas wants to do. They want to be their own team. They want to be a Hendrick. They want to be a Joe Gibbs Racing. You know, and Ford basically gave them that.
Well, maybe they want to get into the you know, car supplying business like Hendrick does. You never know. Maybe they want to be the, you know,
possibly.
Yeah, they want to be the smart one, because I don't think Roush might offer it to some of the teams, but I don't think anybody's, you know, beating down their door for their cars the way they run. You know, I don't think Penske sells cars to anybody other than, you know, Ryan Blaney and the Wood Brothers. I think they're the only ones who Penske supplies. So, you know, there really isn't a quote-unquote go-to, you know, Ford builder out there right now. So maybe that's what they want to be. You know, Hendrick makes a ton of money building, you know, chassis and engines for these other teams out there. I mean, they did it for years.
That's what we
they
brought
did it for years with Truex. Yeah, so, you know, that's a big business. That's a big side business in NASCAR. So maybe they want a piece of that, you know, on the Ford side.
But as far
it's going to take them a while to get there, obviously, but, you know.
I was going to say, as far as what we heard officially, and you're saying this, Brandon, because I haven't had a chance to actually see the official statement from Tony Stewart himself, but as far as what we heard officially from Tony, we wouldn't necessarily, nobody's really still even sure, because as you're pointing out, basically his comments, you're kind of saying were owners speak, huh? I mean, it was all very, very vanilla.
Yeah, well, you know, when you sign a, you know, I don't know what the numbers were, but you got to think it's a multi-million dollar deal with, you know, Ford. You got to kind of, you know, play along whether you're on board or not. I think he is on board, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I don't think this was like a power play of Haas behind Stewart's back or anything.
Mm-hmm. No. And you've got to remember, they're doing this after the first race in the season. They've got to play nice with Hendrick and Chevy for the rest of the season.
Yes, I've read quite
you
a
know,
bit from
whereas
both
you
sides
saw,
on that as well, too.
You know, whereas you know when Truex and them switched, or I'm sorry, because I get Furniture Row and Front Row mixed up so often. Who was it that left Chevy? Well, I think they both left Chevy.
Yeah, they did.
No, well,
yeah,
Front Row, I think Front Row was Ford last year.
Yeah,
too,
no, it
so.
Was. Yeah, I think it was Truex, because they went from Chevy. They went
from
Chevy to Toyota. And they, on their way out, they kind of trashed Toyota or Chevy.
Because
when they went over, I think it is.
Everybody on the Chevy camp gets annoyed because, you know, Hendrick has that stranglehold top. You know, they get the best of everything. They get the best engineering, all the support, you know, and everybody else is left to pick up the crumbs. So I guess that makes for a little bit of bitter feelings with Chevrolet, you know, the Chevrolet teams.
And that's what they quoted as their reason for leaving Chevy was, you know, they wanted to go to Toyota because they, you know, they felt, you know, they were getting the raw end of a deal.
They'd be a bigger fish in a small, you know, in a bigger pond, bigger fish in a smaller pond kind of thing. Although, I don't know. It's hard to say that. I think Toyota's, you know, on par with Chevrolet at this point. I mean, they don't have the number of teams. Nobody does. But, you know, I think, you know, I think all three manufacturers are, you know, if they all have teams that can win. You know, they all have teams that can put it up. I mean, clearly Penske between Logano and Keselowski can win races. And they've won championships. So, you know, you can't take that away.
No.
Absolutely not.
You know, Ford came out at the end of last season and said, hey, we know that we're falling behind and we're going out there and we're actively trying to reassert ourselves in NASCAR and bring championships and, you know, bring our competitiveness back in. And that's why I think you saw some of that stuff at the end of last season with, you know, some people switching back over to Ford. And now with Stuart Haas going in, you know, and they may have tipped their hand at the end of last season without, you know, looking back at it now, that may have been when they started talking with Stuart Haas about getting to be dominant again.
That's a good
point.
But
nobody saw it. Nobody saw it at that time because there was no rumor mill about, I mean, you know, like we said, you know, this completely took everybody by surprise. You know, and they, you know, looking back at it, they may have kind of tipped their hand.
You'll see this again when Dodge is ready to come back. Dodge will poach somebody at some point. They will poach some team from somewhere to be the quote-unquote, you know, factory flag flying, you know, center of their return when they do. And I mean, Toyota did it back in, you know, when they came in, they got Michael Waltrip and Gibbs, and, you know, the Michael Waltrip thing kind of blew up. So they brought in Truex this year as a satellite. I think Toyota still wants another team. Maybe not a you know, like a Stuart Haas caliber, but a solid two-car team. I think Toyota wouldn't mind that from everything I've read.
Yeah,
I think they would like Furniture Row to become a two-car team, to be quite honest with you.
They were saying at the end of, you know, Toyota was saying at the end of last season after they announced that, you know, Truex and Furniture Row, or is it
Furniture Row.
Furniture, and Front Row is the one that runs too.
Front Row is the back marker team that barely, you know.
Right. Anyway, but they had said that they had rooms after Truex came over. They said that, you know, they still had room for two more cars, and they were out there trying to get those two cars. So, you know, yeah, they're definitely trying to, you know, still swing a couple more on their side. So,
well,
yeah, I don't think we're done with Toyota's, you know, trying to get some more teams. I think Toyota feels they to be competitive, they need a bit more.
Yeah.
Interesting because, you know, going back to our good friends, the conspiracy theorists, you know, there was, again, I guess in one or two of the Facebook groups that I'm in, and I think maybe Sidekick, you're in one of them as well.
I'm in one of them, yeah.
Yeah, you're in one of them as well. And then also in some articles that I had seen published. Boy, these you know, I don't know how else to phrase it, but say these old timers who just want to, you know, hey, I'm a born Chevy man and I'm never going to change. And gosh darn it, I mean, you, Harvick, you, you know, people are coming out and said, you know, that's it. I'll never support Harvick again. What? I mean, to me, it just is so, I mean, I'm coming out against it, and yet there are a lot of purists out there that would say, "See that, Frat House Mike? You don't understand what NASCAR is all about, because that's what NASCAR was built upon—that loyalty factor." I mean, am I completely? I mean,
well, no, you're right, because that comment I made earlier about the you know, when stock was in stock car, that comment came out of that thread. You know, it was entertaining to watch, to read some of the comments in that thread. And essentially what this one NASCAR group we're in, Racing Nation, we had Benny Fry, who's one of the admins for that group. We had him on last season. And that they posted their Friday question, that, you know, with now that Ford's going to SHR, yo, are you manufacturer loyal or are you driver loyal?
Right.
You know,
okay.
That thread's still going.
It's still going, yeah.
I
don't know what the right answer and the wrong answer is. I really don't. It just seems to me, I suppose, that, you know, NASCAR is a NASCAR is evolving, like all other sports. It's evolving.
Sure.
And people, you get with it. That's all. Go ahead. And,
I think the days of supporting one manufacturer per se, you know, the cars look so much alike anymore. Really, what's the point? You know, you know, before you could at least tell, you know, which ones were which on the track. You really can't now unless you know. So, you know, I think you just got to just go with who you like, period. I think that's, you know, and those traditional guys, as you were pointing out, they don't like that. They don't like the fact that the cars all look the same. They don't like the fact that, you know, you can't tell a Ford from a Chevy just by looking, you know,
right,
from a distance. So that's why they're all panties are in a bunch. They're in a bunch anytime NASCAR evolves.
Yeah.
And I do kind of see their, you know, the purists that say, hey, we need to get back to stock car racing. You know, you take a Ford Fusion off the line and, you know, and you do that and you take a Camry, you know, and to some extent, I agree with that a little bit. But I also understand that if you go back and you do that, you're going to lose the fact that these guys are, you know, hitting 200 miles an hour. You know what I mean? You can't go and take a Fusion off an assembly line, throw a nice V8 in, souped up V8 in it, you know, do some tweaks to it and stuff and get it out on Daytona, you know, out Daytona and get that thing going 200 miles an hour. It's not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Not at this point.
But,
you can't de-evolve NASCAR.
Right. But they could do a little bit more with the cars to make them more manufacturer equivalent. You know what I mean? Make them look like a, you know. And I think that's part of what led to, you know, Dodge getting out. Because remember, that's when, you know, Dodge had them, those stub nose, you know, the Chargers and the Challengers.
Yeah.
And that went to that
Xfinity series, the cars, you can still distinguish a Camaro from a Mustang kind of thing. You can tell them apart a lot better in Xfinity.
Yeah. And I'm glad, and I like that they did that. It used to be they were running the same thing and they went to with the Xfinity series where, hey, we're going to run the Camaros and the, you know, and the Vets and all that stuff. And I like that, you know, and they do, those cars do kind of resemble more what their stock car equivalents look like.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, a Camry, a Sprint Cup Camry doesn't look like a Camry, and it does, you know, Fusion doesn't look like a Fusion. You know what I mean?
I agreed with you. I agree with you. Yep, I see where you're going with that one. Absolutely, that. Yep.
Yeah.
I've often
the cars
thought
the all
same
look
thing.
The same. There's just some decals on them.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
I have often thought. I have often thought the exact same thing. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. You know, because, you know, I still consider myself a newbie to this sport. But, you know, if we're going to call it stock car racing, stock car. These cars don't look like stock. So,
exactly.
Many times I have kind of thought that very thing. All right, what do we got here? We got about 15 minutes, and I'll tell you what I want to do. Because I want to throw into the mix here. I got to throw in a little bit of a. I got to throw in a little bit. Yep. Yeah, man. Got to throw in a little bit of drag racing. So I thought real quick, just go around, take a look at what's happening in NHRA. We're going to our second event today. Finals, actually. They've been qualifying now since Friday. But we got the finals today out at the Auto Parts NHRA Nationals in Phoenix. However, 2 weeks ago, season opener at the Winter Nationals in Pomona, we already had our first Wallys awarded last 2 weeks ago. Steve Torrence picked up a Wally, his first one for this season, obviously the first event of the season, in Top Fuel. Ron Capps, there's that DSR group, Don Shoemaker Racing, Ron Capps, Funny Car winner, and Greg Anderson took the Pro Stock. That was 2 weeks ago. And at this point, obviously, you know, standings, are they really all that important at this point? Listen, we still got 17 events remaining before we get to the NHRA's countdown. So, obviously not too much. But Steve Torrence, obviously, with that win, leads all right now in Top Fuel, 32 points ahead of Doug Coletta. Ron Capps, 22 points ahead of Dell Worsham, and Greg Anderson, 20 points ahead of Jason Line. And those are the standings after just the first event. But we're heading out to Phoenix. And by the way, coverage going on this year over on Fox Sports 1. Little different, I will say that. Coverage was a little bit different. Takes a little getting used to when you've gotten used to the way things were over on ESPN. The first thing you get used to is the fact that you don't have to wait until 1 o'clock in the morning to see anything. 5 p.m. Eastern time, you can catch the coverage from Phoenix, and some of it will be, in fact, live. That's a nice part. That's a nice thing. But obviously, like I said, the coverage a little bit different. But that's the first thing. Second thing, get into where we stand for today's finals in Pro Stock. Bo Butner's got the number one spot on the bracket, on the ladder. Number one for Bo Butner. Jason Lyon is sitting there at number two. Greg Anderson all the way up there at number three. Erica Ender's coming from number five, and she'll be going up against her teammate Drew Skillman in the first round of the finals today. So one of those elite cars will be knocked out of there early. Chris McGay, continuing from where he started last season, he's coming in at number five. No 15 and 16. Yeah, well, kind of a similar situation to what we saw last season at this time. We're only fielding 14 Pro Stock cars in Phoenix. And like I said, that's a kind of a similar situation to what we saw last year. We're early on. You're going to see some cars. I know that V Gaines took a pass on, I think it was V Gaines. Wasn't it V Gaines, Brandon, that I heard took a pass, I think, on today's, didn't he? And yet I see him on the ladder.
Yeah, he qualified. We were watching qualifying a little bit last night. He took a pass down yesterday. He ran.
Somebody's not running today that normally does. I'm trying to remember who it was. I was thinking it was V Gaines. But no, I see his name.
He was there. He was in it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who's missing.
Yeah, somebody purposefully said, you know, we're not going to go to Phoenix. But anyhow, what's a funny
girl? Maybe Gray, Shane Gray, maybe.
Yeah. It might come to me yet.
Okay.
Over in Funny Car, looky, Don Schumacher Racing's got the number one spot. Yeah, Ron Capps, number one, going into today's finals. Courtney Force has got the number two spot. She ran very, very well yesterday, I heard, in qualifying. In fact, I think at one point she had the number to beat. And Ron, I think, came in there and took over that number one spot. She was holding the number one spot for quite a little while in yesterday's qualifying. John Force has got the number three spot. Robert Height. So you got all those JFR cars right in there. JFR cars normally run well in Phoenix. So you got all those JFR cars. You got Courtney at two, John at three, and Robert Height at four. Five, you got Del Worsham. Six, you got Jack Beckman. And let's see, seven, Ted Johnson for the DSR cars. And number eight, Tim Wilkerson. Finally, over in Top Fuel. And again, here we've got a situation where we are only fielding 15 dragsters in Top Fuel. Doug Coletta will run unopposed in the first round. He's got the number one spot on the ladder. So you got Coletta up there. You got Antron Brown in number two. Tony Schumacher, number three. Steve Torrence, number four. Brittany Force coming in at number five. Clay Milliken's at number six. J.R. Todd at seven. And Dave Connolly at eight. All right. So and again, 5 p.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports 1 for live coverage of NHRA. What do you think of the new coverage, Brandon?
So far, it's all right. I'm not going to give them – I'm not going to trash it. It is slightly different, and it does take getting used to different couple different people that we haven't had in the past. But I got to give them – props for the amount of time they're dedicating to it. I mean, they're putting on, you know, two-hour qualifying shows, you know, and they're not putting them on at, you know, ridiculous times. I mean, last night there was one on late, but that was, you know, only due to the fact that it followed Supercross. But they're giving NHRA a little bit more better treatment, I think, so far than ESPN did. And I think their coverage, you know, has room to grow, and I think it will. You know, Tony Petrogon's taken a little bit of getting used to, but I don't think he's, you know, I don't think he's awful. I think there's, you know, something to work with there, you know, and we'll see. I'm just glad, you know, that it isn't ESPN where they're putting it on at 11 o'clock at night anymore. I mean, at least they're getting it at a reasonable hour. And
honest
you know.
To God, well, I'm not joking. There was one time it was like 1 o'clock in the morning where it started.
Last
year. But, you know, I'm not a big fan of either of the Pedregons, obviously. So I'm kind of lukewarm on that one. Maybe I'll get used to them. But the one thing I did find from 2 weeks ago, and we'll see if it's the case again today, when they go to the live here, Brandon, they didn't have it worked out real, in my opinion. I didn't think they had it worked out real well 2 weeks ago, where it seemed like the last 45 minutes, they had nothing but filler going until they could actually get to the heats. I mean, you know, it was just like, I actually got up and I walked away for about 45 minutes and just left it. Because, you know, obviously some of the filler is fine, and when you get into informative stuff, it's fun. But 45 straight minutes of filler was a bit more than I needed.
Well, you know, like you said, it's a learning curve. You know, it's a new product for them. You know, like I said, I'm willing to give them a couple weeks to get their feet under them, you know, get their legs under them.
Absolutely.
At least they're willing to give it a shot.
Absolutely. All right. I guess just a little bit more here than 5 minutes and left for us here this afternoon. And what that means is, well, we need to get Sidekick in here. Son of a gun, if last week this guy doesn't go out
Suckers.
There and
Suckers.
Get a win in the first stinking race. Honest to God, in fantasy.
I'm back to reassert my dominance of this league after losing last season for the first time.
Buddy John better be watching out. Honest to God.
I all over that too. as soon as I got back, you know, back to Orlando from the track, first thing I did was check my teams. Mm-hmm. And I messaged Frat House Blank and I'm like, hey, look at that. Look who won.
Yeah.
And look who came in dead last.
I was going to say, the crazy part was you're winning all the way at the top with the show team, and then with your other team, dead stinking last.
Well, that's because I had Junior and Chase Elliott on that team. And when they both wrecked out, it was like, there goes that.
We're going to talk about our Eat My Dust picks here in a moment. Every single one of us, with the exception of Liz, picked Junior to
tanked
win.
Thank that one.
All right, Sidekick, what do you got for us today as far as who I should not be putting on my roster?
You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Because of the them using the low downforce this week, not quite sure, you know, exactly how that's going to play out. So I'm not changing my roster up one bit this week. I'm gonna run with Brad Keselowski, Jimmy Johnson, Austin Dillon, Brian Scott, and Regan Smith. And I'm gonna go with Jimmy Johnson and Chevy for manufacturer for the fantasy team. Like I said, after you know looking through it and pouring through things, I'm like, you know what? I think I'm just gonna kind of let this one sit, and you know. We'll let Atlanta come out and we'll see if we need to adjust from there. But yeah, with winning last week, I really don't see a need to change anything up.
Oh, yeah. You can just sit back and put your feet up for the rest of the season now at this point.
So. Well, and I'm also, you know, and we talked about it a little bit last week. They've really gotten kind of ridiculous with the pricing model they're using
Really,
for the drivers.
I'm
kind of going more with the, I think I'm going to try and keep the majority of my team and just kind of fill out the bottom guys and that, unless I see a particular driver really start not performing.
Right.
And then I may switch somebody out. So you may actually see me doing that more this season than previous seasons.
Yep.
Where I would, you know, every week I was swapping people in and out. I may be a little bit more consistent this season. So.
All right. Just as an FYI, because our good friend Liz gave her picks in our chat room here, I will mention she is going with Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, and A.J. Allmendinger. That's not a bad team. That's really not a bad team at all. There.
No.
All righty. Last but not least, let's get over to our... And we've changed up the scoring just a bit on this. Every person will get the points awarded to them that their driver actually scored in the race. So right now, in standings for our Eat My Dust, Liz has got 36? Hold on here, Matt. 39. 39 points. And all the rest of us have 6.
Jumping out the gate.
And let's see. I'll start it off here. I'll start it off because I do have the I do have the picks here, and I have a funny feeling today's going to be really diversified. Liz herself is going with Martin Truex Jr. for her Eat My Dust pick there. Our good buddy John is going with Kevin Harvick. Sidekick, where you got it?
I'm going off the wall. I'm going with Kyle Larson this week.
Whoa. I'm writing it
down. I'm taking a roll. I'm taking a roll of the dice.
There you go. Brandon?
Well, I'm going even further out there because the last night's Supercross race happened to be in Atlanta right near the track, and four of our NASCAR guys went over and did a little exhibition race, a little whole shot challenge, and Clint Boyer went well above and beyond, did a face plant into the tough blocks. I'm
beautiful.
Going with my new hero, Clint Boyer, just for his effort. You know, as Deadpool would say, maximum effort right into the wall. Gotta love it. So I'm going with Clint Boyer.
Well, boy, isn't that something? So it would seem that a couple of us here are, as we say, going outside the box. All right. So I will do the same. I will go outside the box as well. I'm going with Jamie McMurray.
That's
an interesting pick.
Yep.
Badass Mike and Sidekick are riding different teammates.
I like what I have seen from him so far early in this season. I like what he's doing. And I said it last night, and I'm going to take the shot on it. He's, I think, coming out of the second or third spot. Yeah, he's number two, coming off number two. He was number three, and then Kyle, of course, got pushed to the back. But I like what I'm seeing from him, and I think he's got a good, good shot at getting a checker this season for sure. So there you go. Our picks will be up on our Frat House Sports Facebook page. Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between, and look for our little purple icon. They'll be up there in just a couple of moments. Many thanks to everybody here. Many thanks to our loyal listener, Liz. Many thanks to John for participating. Many thanks to all of you that have been listening. Please make sure you're here with us on Thursday night for our Frat House Sports Show, our flagship program, coming to you at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll be number 234. And then next Saturday, I'll be back with you at 2 p.m. for another relaxed Frat House Saturday. In the meantime, yeah, boogity, boogity, boogity. Hey, listen, go enjoy the racing. Have a good time. Catch you on Thursday.